Oh, no more mammy and no more pappy. Ain't we lucky, oh, ain't we happy? Everybody's oh so happy. Everybody's happy now. Sex galore, but no more marriages. No one pushing baby carriages. No one has to change a nappy. Ain't we lucky, oh, ain't we happy? Everybody's happy now. Oh, dope for tea and dope for dinner. Fun all night and love and laughter. No remorse the morning after. Who wears a sin and who's the sinner? Everybody's happy now. Girls pneumatic, girls exotic, girls ecstatic, girls erotic. Hug me, baby, make it snappy. Everybody's oh so happy. Everybody's happy now. Lots to eat and hours for drinking. So more cocktails and no more thinking. No more thinking. No more thinking. Oh, everybody's happy now.
And ladies and gentlemen, it's the Gnostic Media Radio Show. I'm your host, Jan Irvin, GnosticMedia.com, GnosticMedia.com. And we have a good show tonight. We're going to try to explain another level of mind control regarding being a regular person and being a professional, or exchange between a bureaucrat and what happens when people start to work. Hopefully our guest, Tjeerd, I'm slaughtering your name again, Andringa, excuse me, is our guest, and he's from the Netherlands. And so I welcome Tjeerd to the show. Welcome.
Hello. Good morning. For me.
For you. And well, thank you for coming on. And it's so what, about 3 or 4 a.m. your time right now?
It's 4 a.m. for me.
4 a.m. All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on. And you and I have been in contact somewhat over the years through the Gnostic Media podcast. And you've got some interesting research. I'm certainly not well educated enough in it to explain it, but basically we're going to be discussing the phenomenology of bureaucratic and non-bureaucratic organizations and people's behavior within them. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, I guess so. Yep.
All right, where would you like to begin then? Do you want to start off by telling the audience just a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, maybe that's the best way. My name is Tjeerd Andringa. I'm a associate professor at the University of Groningen. I'm in a field that you could call cognitive systems research. And a cognitive system is basically a system that does something that humans might also be able to do. So it's really broad. It's something like applied psychology, and then in a very general sense. And one of the important things is that we, and that's my particular angle, I'm interested in the question, why can't we make robots that understand what they are doing? And so basically, we can make intelligent systems, but we can't make understanding systems. And some time ago, I was confronted with the university bureaucracy. And then all of a sudden, I thought, they don't understand what they are doing. And at the same sentence, I basically thought, okay, robots also don't understand what they're doing. So apparently, there is something similar here. So I started asking my colleagues around at conferences, can you make a robot that understands anything of what it is doing? And basically, the answer was always no. I started to look a little bit better at bureaucracies and to figure out what was happening. And at that moment, there was encroaching bureaucracy still there, actually, at my university. So I started to see a lot of similar aspects. And those similar aspects became more and more an interest of me. And the end result that I settled on, basically, and I'm researching that actively, is that I think there is a real difference between intelligence and understanding. And intelligence is what drives bureaucracy if it is not coupled with understanding. So basically, if people act intelligently without understanding what they are doing, they are in a mode that if they do it at work, we call bureaucratic. So that's something of a short summary of why we are talking now. At least there is one important point, and that is the switch between being a regular person, someone who has friends, who interacts in a very normal way, and work is almost imperceptibly. And I find that very, very interesting. Yeah, so it is unconscious. So people are nice, regular persons. They have friends. They behave decently toward each other. And then they go to work, and all of a sudden, they end up in a bureaucratic mode, and they become completely unempathetic, uninterested in the people that they're working with, become paper pushers, only interested in form, not in content. And that is something that is fascinating.
Now, in your paper that you sent me, you give an example of a girl and a parent in the airport, and they're trying to retrieve a stuffed animal. You would give the example.
Yeah, this case was actually a commercial in the Netherlands for an organization that claimed to be not too bureaucratic. And they showed a typical example of someone going to a lost and found department asking for a huge purple crocodile. And the clerk there reaches for a form next to the big animal. And insists people to fill in the form, and after a few attempts, they fill it in.
Let me just interrupt real quick. Do you have any other things running on your internet?
Let me see. Not really.
Okay, just make sure nothing else is running because you're a bit choppy.
Ah, okay. It might be because I don't have this the quickest of connections here.
Ah, okay. All right, so go ahead. I interrupted you about the form next to the big purple crocodile.
Yes, and then the form is filled in, and then the clerk informs the family that they can return the next morning between 9 and 10 to collect the big crocodile. And then they say, but the crocodile is there. Yes, what's the point of that? Says the clerk. Yeah, so basically what is happening here is that the clerk is only interested in the paper reality. He has no interest whatsoever in the actual reality and is completely unempathetic, and everything has to happen according to his little rule book. And of course, I think everyone has seen these kind of things. And has been suffering under these kind of things. And so they are so normal that it's easily overlooked.
Yeah, and they basically just lose the humanness factor, and then they're only concerned with the protocol of bureaucracy. Never mind that it would be a lot simpler to just reach over and hand the crocodile to the person and say, have a good day. You have to fill out this form, and then, you know, let's have you waste some more time and come back tomorrow.
Yeah, but that is from the viewpoint of the customer, from the viewpoint of the bureaucrat. He is trying to keep his world overseeable. And so if there is a mismatch between his paper world and the actual world, no crocodile while it should be collected the next day, that is really a problem for this poor little bastard.
All right, so let's go on here. What are incentives for coercive formalization or bureaucratic dynamic?
Well, basically, we have many ways of working together. And there are many ways that work really well, and there are many ways that are working not so well. And if you look at how we tend to work together, then there are a number of things really important. One is how many rules we come up with. And the other one is what is the purpose of the rules? So if you have a lot of rules, then you don't really have to understand what you are doing because you simply follow the rules. So that's one way of looking at it. And the other way of looking at it is, what are the rules for? Are they for the hierarchy? Are they for the organization, for the top typically of the organization? Or are they for the worker? And if they are for the worker, then the worker is actually helped. If they are for the organization, then the organization is protected from the improvisation ability of individual people. So that is eventually the real problem. So if you look at an organization, you have sometimes very capable people. Capable people are able to make decisions for themselves. If they make decisions for themselves, then they are a source of improvisation, of input that can't be predicted completely. And if you have a good organization, you rely on that, and you have skilled workers that produce high-level results. But if you have a different type of organization, then you actually see this as a source of improvisation that you have to suppress. And then you end up in a typically bureaucratic organization, an organization that looks at its workers with a sense of they are a potential source of error, a potential source of diversity, of complexity, and you have to suppress that. So instead of seeing your workers as a solution, which you see them if you see them as very skilled people, you see them as a source of problems. So that is, I would say, the basic difference, whether you see your workers as problems.
All right, so authority, external for bureaucracy and internalized for non-bureaucratic approaches. What does that mean?
Well, it is important to first define authority. The word is used an awful lot. And for me, I have a very, very simple definition of authority, namely the ability to shape, maintain, or create a habitat, or in this case, a work environment. So the authority can either be with the workers that shape their own environment, which where they work in, or it can be externalized by the people who shape the organization. And in one sense, in the first sense, the worker is the authority, is authoritative. In the other sense, the authority is external. And that is a very important difference because it's also the difference between intelligence and it is the driving difference between whether you approach something from an intelligent point of view or from an understanding point of view. When you understand something, you can be authoritative. You can make your own decisions. But when you are not, when you don't understand, you have to use your intelligence to figure out what do my authorities, external authorities, actually want me to do. And you change everything into a problem. And intelligence is for problem solving. So you measure intelligence by giving people an IQ test in which you give them all kinds of self-contained problems, and the better they are able to do them, the higher their intelligence. But what they are doing actually is producing the answers that you think that they should produce. And the better they produce the answers of the IQ test, the more obedient they are as workers and the more intelligent they are as well. So intelligence and a low level of internalized authority go together. Does that make sense?
Yes. On a side note, do you see, I suppose this would go into, I think, what Clint Richardson has been trying to expose with the way that government operates now versus how it's supposed to operate if people actually knew and followed the law. So you have like your first graph in your paper, it's basically broken down into organic growth and enabling bureaucracy on one side and autocratic and mechanistic on the other. Do you see any overlap between government today and then the typical interpretation of so-called anarchy?
Oh, yes, yeah, very much, very much. So in that graph, there are four different types of organizations. One is called autocratic, one mechanistic, one enabling bureaucracy, and one organic. And the organic society is typically an anarchistic society. It is a society in which everyone is an authority on its own, and everyone is co-responsible for the whole. And there is no central command. But still, everyone might agree on the same goal. And so it might actually be a very, very good way of working together. It's like how friends work together. There is no boss among friends. So everyone can do this. Then you have the autocratic society, basically. And that is a society in which one person, or a few persons, or in the case of an oligarchy, have an awful lot of power, awful lot of responsibility, and they direct other people. So basically, and then you have a hierarchy, a very high hierarchy then. And that can still be a situation which people have a lot of freedom, but as long as they do what the top of the hierarchy says. But if you can also reduce that freedom, and then you end up in a mechanistic society. That's a society in which has very, very little possibilities, very little ways of working. And for example, autocratic society is probably a United States society at the moment. A mechanistic society could be, well, maybe Cambodia, just after the revolution of Pol Pot then, where they were really very, very afraid of everything intelligent, everything but more skilled than the people themselves, or than the leaders. They were trying to organize every aspect of society in a very, very nitty-gritty type of way, highly mechanistic society. And then you have something in between organic and mechanistic society, which is enabling bureaucracy, which is centered at working better, at living better in a complete society. It's definitely focused on the people and not on the top of the hierarchy. But it's still very much structured so that you don't need a high level of understanding. And that maybe is a little bit like Japan. Probably not the best example, but it's also Sweden or so. Typically quite stultifying social democracies with a strong support for everyone who is, well, has a problem. Instead of solving their own problems, they look for the state to help them.
Interesting. All right. So what is the authoritarian dynamic?
Well, I think that is something that is of absolute importance. The authoritarian dynamic is the name of a book from a Princeton researcher, Karen Stenner. And it says that the intolerance of a society or of intolerance of people scales with the level of authoritarianism, which is basically the level of not understanding your world, times the fear level. So the higher the fear in society, and the higher the lower the understanding of the world, the more intolerant people become.
All right, and we'll be right back after this break.
Yep.
No more thinking. Oh, everybody's happy now.
And we're back with Tiered Andringa and it's the Gnostic Media Radio Show, and we're discussing, how would you describe this, Tiered?
You mean the topic that we're doing now?
Yeah, how do you describe what the topic is? I guess that's what I'm having a hard time getting my head around.
Well, for me, the topic is how we think, and how we think is a combination of our intelligence and our understanding, and applied then to societies and to bureaucracies. So,
and understanding essentially that people function under two different modes. Essentially, they go into almost a state of mind control when they're in a bureaucratic type situation, and then they walk out of that, and then they're a normal person that you would meet. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, it would be accurate, yes. And because work is so important, they spend 8 hours or 10 hours per day in work, they miss out 8 or 10 hours per day on being a regular, normal person. So it has consequences, and I it has very bad consequences for society, I think.
Do you want to dive into some of those consequences now, or should we wait?
Let's do that later.
Okay. All right, let's get back into the authoritarian dynamic. And you said that was written by Karen Stenner?
Yes.
Okay.
What I think is that authoritarian dynamic that is describing what our elites are doing. So you spend a lot of time describing and how our education has become of a lower quality, how we lost the trivium, we started to think less effectively, easily fooled, etc. And so our understanding basically of the world has decreased in the last century probably. At the same time, the complexity of the world has increased. So we are not as much in tune with society, with our world, as we used to be. Yet at the same time, we have a very high threat level. And the authoritarian dynamic says that intolerance to differences is our lack of understanding times the threat level. And the threat level has been raised artificially by the war on terror, for example. And that is directly a reference to that. Yeah, so now all of a sudden we live in a world in which terror is a real problem. Of course, it isn't a real problem. What is a real problem is diabetes or so. But hardly anyone dies from terrorism. But still, we make it.
Well, we have to put all the focus on that, because then what would rulers use against us to keep us in fear?
Yes, that. Oh, no, definitely. But also something very simple. About one-third of the national budget of the United States goes to national to defense or security. Yeah, so you need an enemy for that.
Absolutely.
And with an enemy, with threat comes an enemy. Yeah, so it is. If you set up your society like this, you can't be without a constant threat. Otherwise, you have to rework your society. And
you might have to put all of that money into, you know, life.
Something
and
useful.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, in improving your streets. Yeah, oh, no, God forbid. No, we have to, or you have to bomb other countries. Otherwise, you will have good roads.
Well, imagine, you know, if all of us could keep all of that tax money every year, what we would be able to do with it on our own. So even, you know, taking that money from us is a way to keep us down in this bureaucratic system as well.
Exactly, yeah. And that is the mind control.
Right.
It's basically suggesting that the world is in a certain way while it is in a completely different way, and have us act in a way that is not consistent with how the way world is actually working. And that makes us more and more incompetent in dealing with the world, because we are not in sync, in tune with the world. So we are doing basically random things from our perspective, but we're doing exactly what our elite want us to do, namely wasting our time.
Right. So, well, you know, they definitely don't want us to build families and things that last long term and all of that good stuff.
No, they want you to spend your time on everything short term.
And we'll be back, ladies and gentlemen, with Tiered Andringa.
Lots to eat and hours for drinking. So more cocktails and no more thinking. No more thinking. No more thinking.
And ladies and gentlemen, we're back. And we're with Tiered. Oh, am I going to pronounce this right? Andringa. And we're just...
fine.
Oh, sorry about that. I'm sure in Dutch I would say it a lot better, wouldn't I?
Oh, yes, yes. But it's basically the same name as Andrews. Inga means of. So Andrew, the S of Andrews also means something like of. So Anders.
Oh, okay.
Of Anders, belonging to Anders, something like that.
All right, so did we get much into this authoritarian dynamic yet? We keep mentioning it, but I'm afraid we still haven't really dug into it.
Well, I'd say that it's actually not so complicated. The authoritarian dynamic is what our elites are using to close down society, to ensure that we actually ask for our ask our authorities to make society manageable. It is a direct reference to what Aldous Huxley said, that people love their servitude. They ask for their servitude. They ask society, they ask their leaders, their authorities to shape a more simple society in which they can feel functional and adequate.
They have to be dumbed down and pushed along and manipulated, though, to want to get to a point where they love their servitude. I mean, the CIA has spent 62 years at least, and then the OSS before them, you know, managing society and pushing them, nudging them toward this direction.
Oh, yes, yeah. I'm sure the authoritarian dynamic is known for millennia. This is the normal tool of the aristocracy. But the moneyed aristocracy or all kinds of other aristocracies, this is what they use. You dumb down your society, you introduce a threat, and then society will ask you, the authority, to solve the problem and to make society more manageable, more simple. This is what's happening. This is the normal way of working. This explains how wars start and why people participate in wars, why you can have a dictatorship, why people participate in a dictatorship.
Right. Yeah, I was just thinking of when I was in Amsterdam on a train, and I had just left Serbia a few hours before, and I was trying to have a conversation with somebody about the war, and some people overheard. They were really upset with me because what I was saying didn't jive with the official government version to push people in the war, this terrorist guy Milosevic that everybody had to be protected from. And meanwhile, that wasn't the real situation there. But
think this is really interesting. What I do sometimes when I give a critical thinking course, I expose people to conspiracy theories. And the interesting thing is that people, the plausibility of the conspiracy theory scales with how far it is from their comfort zone. So by the normal media, we define what the comfort zone is of people. So if someone like you comes then and says, but Milosevic is actually not the worst person in the world, he's trying to protect his society, then you are far out.
Right.
And therefore, you come up with a completely implausible, conspiracy theory or whatever.
Right. Making a bunch of people around me in the train on the way back to the airport from the Amsterdam Grand Station, making them real upset at me. All right. So let's get into some of the characteristics of bureaucracy.
Okay. Well, I would say a typical characteristics of bureaucracy is that the workers are seen as a source of problems, and their ways of improvising, their ways of not following protocol, is seen as the biggest problem of the organization. And therefore, the focus of the organization changes from doing whatever the organization is supposed to do in society, delivering a particular service, to focusing inward and to trying to prevent the workers from doing all kinds of things that that are uncontrollable. That means basically that all the skilled people who know how to realize the goal of the organization are now seen as a problem in that organization. They are the ones who are not following protocol because it's not necessary or insufficient or whatever. They are realizing the real goal of the organization. But that's not the focus anymore. The focus is following protocol. And that is, I would say, the most important point of a bureaucracy. The inward focus towards preventing people from doing things that are not scripted.
All right. Who are Adler and Borries? What do they contribute?
Well, what they contributed is basically what we already said. They are a number of researchers who looked at organizations with highly skilled people, typically engineers and more creative type of engineers, and those type of people really hate bureaucracy because they need the freedom to explore and to come up with really good things, and they want to contribute to society. They don't want to contribute to the organization. That is just the means. It's not the end. So basically, they wrote down that there are two ways of looking at bureaucracy. One, it is bureaucracy is helping very lowly skilled people because they simply have to follow protocol and they don't have to understand what they are doing. But it's hindering the highly skilled people who understand what they are doing and who want to make a difference in the world and want to contribute to the world by working in this organization. So you have two completely different attitudes towards formalization in an organization. One, as seeing it as too much formalization as a problem. That's what the highly skilled people who understand what they are doing see it. And you have the people who are the lowest denominators, the stupidest people, who actually love it because they can work at a much higher level, seemingly at least, than they would otherwise be able to do. Because they only have to follow protocol. They don't have to understand what they
do. Now, are they really people that are stupid or people that are undereducated and just sort of automatons?
The undereducation is the problem.
Right.
Yeah,
I just want to be careful of that word "stupid" because it can be interpreted wrongly.
Ignorant would be a good word.
Yeah, there you go. That's a much better word.
Yeah.
All right, so let's see. There are degrees of suitable formalization. Let's talk about that. So what is a suitable level of bureaucracy? What is it helping in the society or whatever? At what level do you think we need it at?
Well, that depends how ignorant your society actually is.
What if you're constantly pushing them to be more and more ignorant?
Well, then you need more and more structure, more and more formalization.
Right.
Yeah. So that is exactly the problem. Yeah. So
if you see if you see bureaucracy expanding, then that should automatically signal that people are becoming more and more ignorant and that the solution to that should be to counter ignorance by education, correct?
Yes, exactly. Yes, and it's also the problem at the same time because people who don't understand what they are doing, they don't see the way out of this through learning. Yeah, that is really a problem.
It's like Dunning and Kruger's paper. What is it? Ignorant and unaware, or something like that. Now I have to pull it up. It's up on the TriviumEducation.com website.
Mm-hmm.
Incompetent and unaware. That's what it is.
Oh yeah. But that is a really horrible situation. And then you need a guide. You need some time. You need a safe situation. And then pretty much everyone, can learn his way out of this ignorance. But if you increase the fear level, then people don't want to make mistakes. They don't want to be singled out as the source of a problem. Therefore, they don't learn. And you nudge society further in the direction of...
So what you're saying is, a flock of turkeys is going to make more turkeys so that they don't accidentally, get outdone by somebody else. It's job security, basically.
It is, yeah, something like that. But it's only in the case of fear, of a pretty high fear level. If people feel confident in their environment, then they start learning. They start reflecting on their work, and they learn their way situation. So the fear level is important. So that's one of the reasons why all those organizations have constant reorganizations. That is increasing the fear level.
Yeah.
And that's a way of keeping everything stable, strangely enough.
Someone in the chat says stupid versus low IQ, and then he says it has been asserted that high IQ means more compliant. What do you think of that?
I think I agree with that.
Okay.
A high IQ in combination with low understanding means very much compliant. I get students every year at my university, and what is the main characteristics that they have in common is that they are so damn compliant. They have done exactly everything what their teachers wanted them to do in the last 10, 15 years. And if we want, that's what we want. We want to create independent thinkers. Well, that's the first time that they actually are asked to do things like that. Because beforehand, they were always doing exactly what the teachers wanted them to do.
Go along, appeal to that authority, and that's, and that is actually conditioned into the children in the compulsory education system. So that by the time they're exiting 12th grade, they are already of this bureaucratic mindset. They already know that 8 hours a day, they switch modes into this bureaucratic mindset.
Exactly. And during that day, they have been proving their intelligence pretty much every moment of the day, but they have not been working on their understanding of the world. And therefore, they are ending up in highly intelligent, well, morons, is that a good word? What is the word for someone who is ignoramus? Is that a good word?
Yes, yeah, ignoramus. Yeah, that's a good word. It's based on ignorant, ignore again.
Yeah. So we create lots of highly intelligent ignoramus or ignoramus.
I see them. I know nothing directly to you. I see them oozing out of academia all the time.
Oh yes, well I see them everywhere. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, and they don't want to be this. Let's be clear. Well, not everyone, but many of them actually feel that this is a problem.
Yeah. What is a doctorate? Indoctrination, is it not? Isn't that, becoming an expert at essentially the bureaucratic system? And then, of course, Thomas Huxley helped develop the current university system.
Yeah, well, but I agree. I'm a doctor myself.
Right.
But I did it in a slightly different way. I basically missed out on the standard way of getting a doctorate, and that helped me a lot. So I couldn't get money for my own doctorate, basically. So otherwise I would be in the normal system. So I started a company. And in that company, the whole purpose of the company, it still exists, by the way, but the whole purpose of the company was, in the beginning, to get me my doctorate and to give me time to do the things that I wanted to do myself. So I was in control of what I was doing for my doctorate. And then there is no problem. But normally, it is the supervisor who is in complete control and who is basically saying to the PhD student, you're going to do this, this, and that. And then you have a PhD student with an external authority, basically being very intelligent and very compliant. That's nothing to do with independent thoughts. I agree completely.
All right, let's switch to enabling versus coercive approaches.
Okay. So basically, the coercive approach is what you have in a bureaucracy. But in the positive organization, which hopefully everyone has had now and again, and then it's that you are actually working in a team where everyone is contributing in freedom and with his own skills and intelligence. And everyone is contributing to the same goal in a self-directed way. And if you have that, they have no bureaucracy.
Right.
And you can have extremely well-functioning teams that realize the goal of the organization or the group in a very, very effective way. The problem, however, with that is that the moment those teams start to function a little bit less well, you discover that they are actually, in order to work well, they need to function well. And so they are dependent on a high quality. And so they are always a little bit brittle, a little bit fragile. But still, it happens a lot. And if you organize your organization well, so that it's a joy to work for, that people have an intrinsic motivation to work at the organization instead of being forced to comply with rules, that they now see that everything they do is actually contributing society, contributing to the colleagues, contributing to the bigger scheme of things.
Right. So then they're increasing their skill level, which makes them want to increase their level of input into
the organization,
yes. Whatever they're working on. So if you're de-skilling, it reduces innovation, job satisfaction at all, lowers the motivation, and is going to create problems within the organization. And then their solution is more bureaucracy rather than more autonomy. So break right now, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Hours for drinking, so more cocktails, no more thinking, no more thinking, no more thinking. Oh, everybody's happy now.
No more mammy and no more pappy. Ain't we lucky? All right, we're back with Tiered on Dringa, and we're discussing, oh boy, I still can't put this, the bureaucracy versus how people normally live. I still don't have a good way to explain what a good easy term to explain it all at once. I don't have it, but
I would say that the bureaucrat uses only half of his mental facilities, only the intelligent part, the understanding, the empathic, the relationship part is completely absent. Something like that.
All right, well, let's get into de-skilling, and then after this we can take some callers. And by the way, if there are any others out there, I know there's one online now, but 800-313-9443 is the call-in line. So de-skilling.
Yes. That is the way of working in a bureaucratic organization. And typically, if you have an organization that is gradually shifting from a not-so-bureaucratic situation to a bureaucratic situation, then de-skilling is one of the most visible signs of that process going on. So what is happening if you have a not-so-bureaucratic organization in which sufficient number of people feel uncomfortable. The organization is too complex for them, and so they start to feel inadequate, and they live in a world in which their colleagues are fairly adequate, and those people increase the complexity of the organization all the time. So the inadequacy feeling of the people who are not so skilled increases, and they band together, and they start to agree on one particular thing, namely how to simplify this organization.
Right.
And they start scheming together, and all of a sudden, the people who are more skilled find themselves confronted with a block of people who are less skilled, who want to reduce the complexity of society of the organization. And those people, when they are at places of control, they are going to make the life of the skilled people really difficult.
You got to make the obvious connection to Aldous Huxley right there. Talk about Aldous Huxley for a moment.
Well, you probably see that connection better.
Well, you know, obviously Aldous Huxley wants to make this controlled system for everybody because he's, you know, ignorant and unskilled. You know, all he can do, you know, he's 3/4 blind. He just sits there and reads all day and schemes up ways of how to lower the cognitive functioning of those who are more skilled and more able. And then he spreads this psychopathology through society via the CIA, MI6, et al.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, of course, he had the blueprint for it already in Brave New World.
Yeah.
In which he in the first pages of the book, he's already explaining that you need different skills levels in society. all those different A, B, C, D, etc. That is skill levels. Or levels of understanding that the people are capable for.
Your work, dear, really puts Aldous Huxley on a whole new level of understanding, a lower level for him anyway.
Well, personally, I think that Aldous Huxley was knowing exactly what he was working on. And the only problem is that he used it for selfish purposes.
You're right.
He knew really well how.
Well, he was a Fabian socialist. He would say, "Well, I was doing it for the greater good."
Yes, as he saw it. Yes,
yeah. Yeah. Hold that thought. We're at the top of the hour. We'll be back in a minute or two here.
So happy, everybody's happy now. Lots to eat and hours for drinking. So more cocktails and no more thinking. No more thinking. But no more marriages, no one pushes.
And we're back with Tiered Andringa. Boy, yeah, thank you. I'll get better at that. I have to say that 10 times fast so I can really slaughter it.
I don't mind.
All right, so we were discussing de-skilling, but we do have a caller before we go on. So you want to take a caller now, Tiered?
That's fine.
All right, let's go to Chris in Colorado. Chris, you there?
Hi, Chris.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, guys. I just wanted to probe you guys a little bit on the issue of kind of what you're talking about with academia and bureaucracy, and how that all fits in together. Because I went to a liberal arts college, and I studied the trivium and quadrivium.
Okay.
Myself. And after I graduated, this was like about 10 years ago. And after I graduated, I learned that there was it was a pretty rigorous program, and we did a lot of, we did a lot of logic and philosophy and all that stuff. But there was a lot of fluff about getting to the absolute truth or this or that. And the classes, or a lot of the classes, would more or less come to a consensus about what was right and what was wrong. And then after the years went by, I realized that a lot of the stuff that I was learning was kind of, it was basically a lie. And I had to sift through what I learned in college and then...
Well, it sounds like you began to learn the proper method of applying the trivium. You know, there's two different versions of the trivium. There's the classical version, which is used to fool people, and then there's the trivium method when you ask the who, what, where, when, why, and how before you ever reach a conclusion on anything.
Right. Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I don't know exactly what distinction there is between those two, but
just to explain real quick, the classical trivium doesn't put things in any order. The trivium method, which is a method, is grammar, then logic, then rhetoric. First, you have to ask who, what, where, and when before you can determine why something is. And once you have the knowledge and understanding, once you have the who, what, where, and when, and then why, then you can express how to others how you reach that conclusion using primary documentation. But you gather all of the grammar first before you try to reach a conclusion. The classical trivium spins it all out of order. You know, they'll usually, you know, rhetoric, logic, grammar, the order doesn't matter. You know, the quadrivium, it can be astrology, music, geometry, arithmetic rather than arithmetic, geometry, music, and astronomy. It's number in itself, number in space, number in time and space. So, you know, there's a specific order to these things, but these things have historically been taken out of order by the sophists to control and confuse people intentionally.
Okay. Well, I'll have to look into that a little bit more on my own. At any rate, yeah, I just kind of discovered stuff on my own. I just know that there's a lot of inconsistencies with what I was taught.
Sure. So what's your point with bureaucracies, et cetera?
Well, the thing is, what was I coming to? Oh, yeah. So, and a lot of my friends have gone through grad school and they grind through it, basically, and they tell me all their complaints about grad school and how it's this kind of big, basically this big meat grinder, and there's a lot of grade inflation. And what I realize is that even from my experience with people who were into the liberal arts and trying to find out the so-called truth, they ultimately have to find a job.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know what you're trying to get with that. There is no the truth. We have truth regarding specific topics and specific instances and specific facts. You know, that's one of the tactics where the trivium is misused, and people try to say, well, you can't know the truth. Well, there is no the truth. We can know truth regarding specific topics. Okay, so we have to approach it. What is the specific point we're looking at? Have I verified the primary citations? Have I looked at that? If two people get on the same page and use the same word definitions, they should be able to understand a topic a specific way. But, you know, you're confusing the classical trivium versus the trivium method. The trivium method, if you're applying it correctly, as you started to find these contradictions in what you were being taught, contradiction is a sign of a lie or an error, and they should have taught you this within the proper trivium to begin with. But, you know, it's the trivium method maintains consistency with reality. So if they're, and this is how we find truth with something, we can verify something in the commons. That's where we get common sense from. So, you know, if you're not able to verify something in the commons, and if they're not providing the specific path to how they reach that conclusion, they weren't teaching you the real trivium, at least not the trivium method. They were teaching you the sophist version.
Well, I wasn't really trying to discuss about the trivium. I was just trying to, like...
Okay, well, get back to your point about bureaucracy or whatever you're trying to raise.
Well, the thing is, in the back of everyone's mind, regardless of what their academic... McBent is that they need to find a job or a career. And what happens is that when they get into grad school, they enter into basically a bureaucratic system.
Right.
And they kind of lose their passion for what they're doing in the first place. And so that the whole idea of getting to the truth of a matter or being a critical thinker is kind of thrown out the window.
Well, it's just, it's just like compulsory education school today, and maybe Tahir can add to this, but We see we see children go into school very curious and wanting to learn, and then they're held down. All of this bureaucratic dumbing down and lack of organic growth and everything, and then the kids get bored and they lose their interest in thinking, which is actually the intended goal of that. But go ahead, Tiered.
Yeah, well, what I think is really important is if you define your life in terms of work, then basically you define your time, your life in terms of which authority am I going to accept as my authority? Because as long as you don't have, you start your own company, you will be working for someone else. And working for someone else is not really a problem, collaborating is not really a problem. But if you let other people really make decisions on your own development in the course of your work, then you are giving away your own authority to that work situation. So I would it depends very much on how you view the whole of your life. And what I noticed more in the United States than in Europe is that an education is for work. And in Europe, it's a little bit more that education is for life, actually. But it's changing also in Europe. Yeah. So don't expect to be able to develop yourself fully in a work situation because it's not designed for that currently. It is you need to be compliant in a work situation. And if you're lucky, you can develop yourself really well in that work situation. It's more luck or choice than something else.
Right. So I guess basically what I was trying to drive at, I guess, is that even in kind of a quote unquote freer academic situation where someone's in the liberal arts, they're still in a system where they're taught compliance.
Yes, I agree.
And I think people, I think students still have this idealism about going to a liberal arts school and not being a part of some kind of bureaucratic system, because they'll soon find themselves into kind of like what I was in, the situation that I was in, where you're everyone's kind of ends up in a consensus situation, and it gets even worse as you get into the more advanced degrees with the graduate school. But that's kind of what I was driving at.
Yeah, well,
I think this is fair. What you were saying.
Yeah.
I also see it in my liberal arts college. We have some students who really take control over their own education, and for them it works really well. And we have some students that go with the flow. And that are always looking to me and to others, what do you want me to do now? And they see me, therefore, they accept me, therefore, as a kind of authority that is deciding on 8 hours of their day, every day. I think you have the opportunity, actually, to take matters completely in your own hand. But, well, we do it at a stage in life where many people are not able to do that anymore. And therefore, everyone eventually ends up nicely in the folds. So the real problem has been created much earlier. And we do a kind of remedial teaching that works on half of the students or so. But on the other half, it's a little bit too late. They already are completely compliant and in the fold of regular society.
You know, Chris, let me just add real quick, and you know, I run the TriviumEducation.com website, which I think if you go through that, you'll see that the Trivium method and a proper liberal arts education should not be about consensus. It should be about consistency with reality. And, you know, so if they're selling you consensus, you know, see, in the logic aspect of the proper trivium, which is grammar, then logic, then rhetoric, and you the grammar aspect is, again, asking that who, what, where, and when, and then the logic aspect is why, and the logic aspect is removing all of those logical fallacies. Well, consensus is appeal to a popularity or bandwagon, et cetera, so that would actually be a failure of the trivium method. And so if they were using those tactics, they were using the classical trivium, which is as old as Rome, and they've been using those tactics for a long time. But the trivium method is essentially, you know, reverses how they use that for control and shows you how it actually works as a consistent system to verify facts in reality and to be able to find consistent truth. So you and I can look at something, we can know, we can verify it each, all of us, and not just based on, you know, consensus because we take a vote, but because we can verify it.
No, I understand. You know what? I totally understand completely what you're saying is what you're saying. It's just that the school where I went to, they were much more subtle about it. They did what they were doing was basic consensus, using a consensus style of teaching, but under the guise of using proper rhetoric.
Yeah,
proper
that's just sophism. You know, the sophists run rampant everywhere. So,
but I can imagine.
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, let Tahir go.
There doesn't have to be any real malice. What I expect actually is that this. Just a lower level of understanding of the trivia method, and you have to if as a group of people you want to realize something, you have to agree on a number of things. So in this case, it was consensus that everyone agreed on, basically, which makes sense,
right?
and then you have something that is going more or less in a good direction, but all of a sudden stops. And you, as a student, then have to take matters in your own hand and, well, discover in real time or a little bit later an even better way of doing it.
Right.
But, you know, it's just the fact that you realize that was going on, Chris, that is actually the proper application of the trivium, not what they were doing to you. Anyway.
I'll let you guys go.
All right. Thank you for the call, Chris. So let's see. I would really like to have you go into the negative and positive effects of formalization, Tiered.
Negative and formal of on the
formalization.
Yeah. Let's see what. Well, basically, so the formalization allows you to do things. That you would not be able to do otherwise, in a structured way, work together in a group. Because if you formalize things, then you have realize results that other people then can work with, and that is in principle a very good thing. The problem, of course, with formalization is when the procedures are not under your control. But are under the control of an authority. Then the authority is determining what you are doing. But if you bring the procedures, the forms, the ways of formalizing your job under the control of the workers, then it's actually a very, very good thing. Yeah. So it is again an authority thing. If it's external or internal, external authority is changing everyone in a kind of automaton, or an internal authority is making everyone an independent agent that happened to work together in a very effective and nice way. Yeah. So formalization is not a problem, but the locus of authority is the problem. Is that the thing that you were interested in?
Yeah, and also just to, you know, go into, okay, so, you know, and you in your article you have some of these items listed, and I did read a few of them off earlier, but negative effects of this: higher absences, propensity to leave,
that kind of thing.
Psychological stress, right?
Yeah, and so suppose you have an organization in which the rules are the procedures are taken over by the management. So what will happen? Then all of a sudden, instead of you working for yourself, for the greater society, you start working for the management. And that changes your motivation type. So instead of being intrinsically motivated because you're doing things that are fun, are interesting, are important for the greater society, all of a sudden you're doing things for other people. And if you don't do those things, then you might have end up in problems, in punishment situations or public shaming or whatever. Or you might lose your job. And then you are extrinsically motivated. You're motivated because you have to do something. You're not intrinsically motivated because you want to do something. And that change, that is something that if you were aware in your own job of why you are doing the things, you can feel it, whether it is an intrinsic or an extrinsic motivation. But if it's too much extrinsic motivation, then you basically don't enjoy work as much anymore. It becomes parasitic
right.
on
so,
you.
So bureaucracy becomes essentially a dichotomy of the positive and negative effects of formalization and trying to balance those out, essentially. Would you agree with that?
Well, yeah, the bureaucracy is on one side of formalization. Formalization working against intrinsic
sure.
motivation.
But it's trying to find that balance, for instance, because, you know, if you can't have too much rollover and people leaving and job dissatisfaction, because then things just grind to a halt. So, you know,
and in many cases they do actually.
Right.
If you look at a big bureaucratic organization, it still exists, and it exists because it's also very stable. Because it might not be doing what it is supposed to do, but it is doing it in a very stable way.
Right, and always working to ensure its existence.
Yes, well, take the military. They will create or think up or that their own enemies, and they will perpetuate. That's no problem.
Yeah.
And it's basically the same with every big organization.
And so today we have the Israeli Secret Intelligence Service, known as ISIS, being touted as a Muslim organization. I don't get it. We'll be right back after this, and hold tight, folks. 800-313-9443 if you'd like to call in and discuss.
Hours for drinking, so much cocktails, and no more thinking, no more thinking, no more thinking. Oh, everybody's happy now.
And we're back. We're with Tiered Andringa, and it's the Gnostic Media Radio Show. I'm your host, Jan Ervin, GnosticMedia.com, GnosticMedia.com. By the way, folks, I did finally put a link to the archives for this show up on the top of the Gnostic Media website, so now you don't even have to go look for it on the menu on the left. So, Tier, let's go back to the negative and positive effects of formalization.
Yeah. Well, one of the interesting things is that every positive emotion, every moment of joy, of satisfaction, or whatever, that is always a good sign, and it's a sign that you are learning, that you are building something. So if you don't feel them at work, then you are in trouble. If you feel them less at work, you're also in trouble. But if you start to feel them more, work related things, then everything is going well. And why is that? If you're working efficiently, even in a formal organization, then the formalization can help to make yourself more efficiently and to realize the goals of your organization and your own goals even better. And so it is, in principle, a good thing. When formalization can also help you to feel pride in your workmanship, in your skills, formalization, making things explicit, you can do that on a very high level when you're highly skilled. It can also work against you if you let other people decide what you do. But if you make your own forms your own, or if you make you formalize your own work, your own level of workmanship, then you can use it as a source of pride.
Right.
Organizing and working together is a source of joy if you do it well. And if you do it well, it increases your autonomy. It increases your making you more authoritative in your own life. Yeah, so and also, when that is the case, you don't notice the rules of the organization, because they are basically your rules. And they're completely taken for granted. Yeah, so if the rules are really helping everyone, then there is no problem. It's just consensus over the way of working. The problem is if you feel the rules, then they are probably productive and under the control of other people.
Interesting. So if you're even aware of them, it's probably
a problem.
Probably reducing satisfaction is going to lead to this negative issue within each person.
Exactly. Yeah.
Interesting. So what about absence of wisdom? How does that play out into all of this?
Well, wisdom is a very high level of understanding, basically. And with wisdom, you're able to create a world in which it's easy and pleasant to live. And what I find always very, very interesting is how little wisdom we have in the media. It's probably impossible to pinpoint any real wise person on American TV.
I would never look
at
for
any
him
point
there.
In time.
All right, if you're looking for wise people, you probably shouldn't be starting there, though.
No, definitely not. No, but there are some wise people walking in the streets and sitting in coffee shops and helping other people and whatever. And so they are abundantly available, but they are definitely not on the media. And I think that is a very explicit de-skilling approach that you can see in society. And it's also it's for the lower level type of people who are running society. The wiser people are incomprehensible.
And isn't that proof positive that the society as a whole is managed?
Yes, it's managed by pretty anxious people, I would say, who don't have a very high level of understanding of society, and therefore they coerce society down to the level of their understanding.
Yeah. That's a very polite way of calling social engineers morons.
Yes. Yeah, well, which they are.
We'll have to. That's great. We'll be right back after this.
Make it snappy. Everybody's oh so happy. Everybody's happy now. Lots to eat and hours for drinking. So more cocktails and no more thinking. No more thinking.
All right, we're back. And we were just discussing the absence of wisdom with Tiered Andringa. And, the issues of bureaucracy et al. And the way it affects people and society, business, government, etc. But, Tiered, we were discussing over the break, you know, and if anybody wants to call in during this segment, it's 800-313-9443. Again, 800-313-9443. But we were discussing during the break blowback. Do you want to go into blowback? We were having a really good laugh about that.
Yeah, well, one of the things that you always hear from the CIA is that they start some project and then 20 or 50 years later, they are confronted with the blowback of that project.
You mean like this show?
and then basically what they are saying is that we were starting things of which we couldn't oversee the consequences.
You're right.
That is a reason to fire them on the spot. Yeah, so if they do this all the time, you don't need more to fire the people who started the operation at that time. simply by using their own arguments. So
right,
it's unbelievable that we accept that blowback story all the time. It is their incompetence that they are, well, showing. They're almost proud of it.
Right. And so, ladies and gentlemen, when you hear the blowback, it's the sign of the intelligence community, the social engineers' incompetence coming back at them and shining in their faces. So all of these topics, all of this material on Aldous Huxley that we've been exposing, and feminism, etc., the promotion of sexual promiscuity, you name it, you know, all of this is, in fact, blowback. You know, maybe that's an even better title for the show.
Yes, it that is one way of construing it. But another way is that what they are doing is actually disempowering society.
Well, sure.
And so they call it blowback. Oh, sorry.
Well, what I'm saying is that when we expose them, it's blowback on them. When we actually pull the primary documents and expose them like you and I are doing in the show, that is actually real blowback, not when they spend blowback for their own control of the situation.
No. But they will be confronted at some point in time now in this show with the fact that they started disempowering projects, they're always trying to disempower the society. And that makes society, of course, gullible, and that makes them more important. And we should break that at some point in time.
Right. So they have to lower the society to the level of themselves so that they can feel like they're one up, you know, all of these occultists and Satanists.
Well, yeah, to a level below the level of themselves.
I'm sure. Yes, indeed. So, and then that way they can feel intelligent and superior, you know, and intelligence. I like to personally call the CIA the Central Entertainment Agency.
Their focus on media, that definitely you can justify that.
Yeah.
And you can laugh on them as well. But still, they have a lot of influence on society that is not so nice.
Yeah, they do. You know, and you know what's most enjoyable is when you uncover one of their scandals in the primary documents and you can just giggle because, you know, at them because, you know, they giggle at society like schoolgirls because they dumb everybody down. They laugh at everyone's credulity. But if people were really that dumb, they, you know, the CIA wouldn't need to be there to constantly push all this degrading, dumbing down stuff, the intelligence community in general.
Yeah.
So, you know, they, you know, if what they claimed, if what the occultists and the Crowleyites and the Huxleyites claimed were true, the intelligence agencies wouldn't even need to exist, you know.
No, they have to create their own reality in order to make it work.
Yeah. Which is, you know, if you think of Carlos Castaneda, a separate reality, and he was one of them.
Yep, exactly, yeah. And so eventually they're going to lose. And that because the learning ability of society is too great. Societies as a whole, despite all the disempowerment that is always going on from the elites downwards, it's smartening up.
Yeah,
and
it
so
is.
They are basically it's a losing battle. And we now know things like the authoritarian dynamic that they use. And we might know it even better than they know it, because for them it is kind of an implicit second nature or something like that. For us, it starts to become explicit knowledge,
right?
That we can see all the time, and we are with so many more people. So if we share this type of knowledge, these type of insights, then after a while they stand with their pants down, more or less.
Yeah, well,
not very well able to move.
Revealing
anymore.
Their impotent little selves.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
All right, any callers, 800-313-9443. Tiered, let's get to, how about psychological roots of bureaucracy? What are those?
The psychological roots of bureaucracy. Well, basically, we talked about them. It is the difference between what I call the coping mode of cognition, which has to do with intelligence, and what I sometimes call the pervasive optimization mode of cognition. Or the co-creation mode of cognition, which has to do with understanding. And we need both. We need the coping mode, intelligence to solve pressing problems. But we are always, always busy with the creation of a world in which it's easy to live. And that is what every animal needs to do. Every plant as well, by the way. You need to ensure that the long term is also really good. Well, those two modes, the short term and the long term mode of deciding on what you're going to do, they work together. And the short term mode is typically intelligence, and the long term mode is the understanding thing. So by removing the long term mode, people shift to the short term. And that is also what you see all the time with those disempowering type of schemes. So with feminism, the long-term mode is having a stable society and having proper roles of men and women that makes sense biologically and socially, etc. And we shift that to short-term gain, like a higher income, more self-decision on your belly or whatever. So we lose out on the long term, and that works basically like disempowerment, and you do that by coming up with very intelligent schemes that activate intelligence and deactivate your understanding of what the hell you're actually doing. So for bureaucracy is exactly this: you shift an organization from the long term. Perspective, what should we do in order to contribute to society, to a shorter mode? How should we do our work, and how can we prevent errors? It's basically the same.
All right, and how can, you wrote a paper on this, a separate paper, and I want to segue into this for a moment. How can people learn autonomy?
Well, that is... Learning autonomy is the normalest thing in the world. It's what we do. And only when it's stultified, that development, then we end up in a situation which we are not fully autonomous. Yeah, so the normal thing would be that you are born and you start to bring your body in the first place under control. And then you go to school, and when everything is working properly, that your teachers teach you a lot about the world, and they teach you how to think properly, a trivium. And when they do, then your thought processes become a reliable source of behavior. And if that is the case, then you can become authoritative in your world. You think thoughts about plants that actually work out in the world as you planned. And then you discover that you can actually shape your world. And this is the most normal thing that can happen, and it's called self-actualization or the development of wisdom. That is the normal way. What is not normal is that if you don't learn how to think really well, so you have the trivium out of order, you don't learn to ask the proper questions, do the proper research, etc. And then you come up with plans that actually don't work out in the world. And when they don't work out in the world, you end up in a situation in which you are always confronted with random outcomes of your own behavior. And when the outcomes are random, and then maybe you should look for an authority that knows better. And then you become an authoritarian, someone who looks for an authority to come up with a better plan than he or she can come.
Right, yeah, well put. And so with that, since we're talking about authority, authoritarianism, let's get into the authoritarian dynamic.
Again, yeah. Well, that authoritarian dynamic is that important thing having to do with if you can come up with plans that work out well in the world, you can create your own world, and you don't have any need for external authority. But if you don't, if your level of understanding of society is low, and it's important to come up with good plans, because the threat level is high, right? The danger, the uncertainty, anxiety is high, then you are going to look for external authorities. So basically, it is the same. Yeah. So that authoritarian dynamic is about the shift between external and internal authority, and it's exactly the same with the shift between being driven by intelligence and being driven by understanding.
So, what are coping modes?
Well, the coping mode is the same as being driven by intelligence, and the pervasive optimization mode is the same as being driven by understanding. Yeah, so pervasive optimization is long-term optimization of every aspect of your world, of your life. Yeah, so if you screw up your life and you create all kinds of problems, you show that you don't understand the world that you're living in. And then you need an authority to you're looking for authorities to help you coming up with better plans. But the moment you learn the skills how to organize your own life, you don't need external authorities anymore, and you can optimize your life pervasively again.
Right, and this is exactly why we see this rampant extended adolescence through society. They have to extend adolescence so that they can keep their authoritarian regime in place, because if people woke up at 13 or 18 or whatever, after they left the house, they wouldn't need authority anymore. They wouldn't need to appeal anymore. They would know how to properly gather and verify information, etc.
Yeah, and they would find it very normal that no one is taking care of them, that they should take care of their own lives. Yeah, so now the expectation is that if you screw up, society will provide you with a net,
right? And then what would the communist, CIA and Mossad agents do? I mean, they would just be like, they would be worthless.
yeah. Well, but we definitely don't need them if you are an independent thinker.
Right.
They don't provide any benefit anymore.
Right. Did they ever, I suppose, is the question.
Well, they benefit for the elites, for the oligarchy.
Right. So then they, of course, they get their reward top down, and then they feed into and perpetuate their own control.
Yeah. Yeah. And they have a little bit more control over their lives than the people that they control. So they are willing fools in this scheme.
Right.
That think that they are doing something really special, but actually they are screwing up progress in society and making, life on Earth kind of fragile at the moment.
Exactly correct.
I mean, these people control atomic bombs and so you don't want to have them too dominant in this world. But then again, they don't overestimate their power. If we overestimate their power, we give them power.
Well, that's exactly right, and that's why we, like you and I, that's why we're here and putting out this information so that people can understand, the levels of all of this type of social control going on. So, that's the whole point of my show here, is to help people understand these things and to empower them to trust their own five senses, to look things up, to rebuild their self-esteem. Because that, and really what all of this stuff that you're talking about here, all of this bureaucratic authoritarianism, it really destroys self-esteem and the person's trust in themselves, and which is what it's designed to do, to give the authoritarian power.
Yep, exactly. Yep. And for me, I'm coming here from a simple question. Why can't we make robots that understand what they are doing? And for me, the joy in the first place that I get from this is that I am one of the first to understand that there are actually two modes of thought, and that talking part, the intelligent part, the coping part, is not the only one, but we have a silent part, the understanding part, wisdom part, pervasive understanding part, that is actually much more important than everyone ever thought. And I see how this is playing out in society, and that gives me, well, great satisfaction, actually, as a scientist.
Yeah, we've only got a few seconds left here before the next break. I want to see if there's any callers out there. We can probably take one caller after the commercial break here. 800-313-9443. If you have any questions or comments for Tyrd, and so anyway, we can also go into some of these other modes or continue on with your paper for a few minutes when we get back. And how much time do we have left there, Mike? Oh, there it is. All right, so never mind, and we'll be right back.
Happy now. Lots to eat and hours for drinking. So more cocktails and no more thinking. No more thinking. No more thinking. Oh, everybody's happy now. Love and laughter, no remorse.
And we're back. We got a few minutes left with Tyrd and Dringa, and we've been discussing, I still don't know how to call this, bureaucracy and the phenomenology of bureaucratic and non-bureaucratic organization and coping modes of cognition, etc. What happens when people get into a work environment where they follow the code and the law of the company or wherever they're working versus your natural organic self, and how it actually drains and dumbs down. It's a form of social control, etc. Tyrd, we only have about 3-4 minutes left. Did you want to begin to summarize, maybe give out a website, any your papers? And I will link your papers up on the Gnostic Media website. Any other information you want the public to have?
All right. Yeah, but I have a website. It is called geopoliticsandcognition.com. I haven't updated that for a year or so now, but at some point in time I will. And there I connect my research to geopolitical things. So you will find quite a bit on bureaucracy there, quite a bit on disempowerment and empowerment, on authority. Who is the authority, you or someone else in your life? All kinds of things like that. And it's a kind of my open scrapbook. And for the rest, I have, and you will link to that, my academic website, in which I produce work in a fairly broad range of topics, lots of sound-related stuff, soundscape-related stuff, but also things on this topic, autonomy. What is life? What are the main modes of thoughts? Why do we have two hemispheres in our brain? What are the differences between those hemispheres? And it's always the same type of thing. So that coping mode of cognition, intelligence, is associated with the left hemisphere. And understanding of the world, empathy, pervasive optimization of your life is associated with the right hemisphere. And when the work situation is shutting down your right hemisphere, because you simply don't know what you are doing, you don't understand what you were doing. You end up in the coping mode, the left hemispheric mode. And if you check the strength of the left hemisphere and you connect that to bureaucracy, then you will see that the strength of the left hemisphere match bureaucracy extremely well. So basically, a bureaucrat is someone with half of his brain shut down.
So
that's kind of a summary.
Yeah, well, it's good stuff, and I really appreciate you coming on and sharing with the audience. I really thought we'd have a lot more callers in tonight because it's such funny stuff to get into when you start thinking about all of this, and it's just another layer of the social control mechanism and exposing how it works and exposing bureaucracies and all of this good stuff. Yeah, that's go ahead.
What I expect is that in the future, maybe in 10 or 15 or 20 years or so, people will understand bureaucracy for what it is, a pathological state, basically, of the workers. And they will actually oppose it, and not only because it's annoying, but because it's really bad for the bureaucrat and the rest of society as well. So I wouldn't be surprised if this is a temporary state of affairs, and that in a few years, a bureaucracy will actually be a very bad word.
And that's a wonderful idea. All right, Teared, thank you so much. That's a wrap. And ladies and gentlemen, GnosticMedia.com. And we'll see you tomorrow. We have a couple of good guests tomorrow you won't want to miss. Take care.
No more cocktails and no more thinking, no more thinking.